suppositions about as bad as it can be, replied the Mole grumpily. And as for what's to be done, why, blessed if I know. The Badger and I have been round and round the place by night and by day. Always the same thing. Sentries posted everywhere, guns poked out at us, stones thrown at us. Always an animal on the lookout, and when they see us, my, how they do laugh. That's what annoys me most.
It's a very difficult situation, said the Rat, reflecting deeply. But I think I see now, in the depths of my mind, what Toad really ought to do. I will tell you, he ought to.
No, he oughtn't,
shouted the Mole, with his mouth full.
Nothing of the sort. You don't understand. What he ought to do is, he ought to... Well, I shan't do it anyway,
cried Toad, getting excited.
I'm not going to be ordered about by you fellows. It's my house we're talking about, and I know exactly what to do, and I'll tell you. I'm going to...
By this time, they were all three talking at once at the top of their voices, and the noise was simply deafening, when a thin, dry voice made itself heard, saying,
Be quiet at once, all of you!
And instantly, everyone was silent. It was the Badger, who, having finished his pie, had turned round in his chair and was looking at them severely. When he saw that he had secured their attention, and that they were evidently waiting for him to address them, he turned back to the table again and reached out for the cheese. And so great was the respect commanded by the solid qualities of that admirable animal that not another word was uttered until he had quite finished his repast and brushed the crumbs from his knees. The Toad fidgeted a good deal, but the Rat held him firmly down. When the Badger had quite done, he got up from his seat and stood before the fireplace, reflecting deeply. At last he spoke.
Toad, he said severely, you bad, troublesome little animal. Aren't you ashamed of yourself? What do you think your father, my old friend, would have said if he had been here tonight and had known of all your goings-on?
Toad, who was on the sofa by this time with his legs up, rolled over on his face, shaken by sobs of contrition.
There, there, went on the Badger more kindly. Never mind. Stop crying. We're going to let bygones be bygones and try and turn over a new leaf. But what the Mole says is quite true. The stoats are on guard at every point, and they make the best sentries in the world. It's quite useless to think of attacking the place. They're too strong for us.
Then it's all over, sobbed the Toad, crying into the sofa cushions. I shall go and enlist for a soldier and never see my dear Toad Hall any more.
Come, cheer up, Toady, said the Badger. There are more ways of getting back a place than taking it by storm. I haven't said my last word yet. Now I'm going to tell you a great secret.
Toad sat up slowly and dried his eyes. Secrets had an immense attraction for him, because he never could keep one, and he enjoyed the sort of unhallowed thrill he experienced when he went and told another animal after having faithfully promised not to.
There is an underground passage, said the Badger impressively, that leads from the riverbank, quite near here, right up into the middle of Toad Hall.
Oh, nonsense, Badger, said Toad rather airily. You've been listening to some of the yarns they spin in the public houses about here. I know every inch of Toad Hall inside and out. Nothing of the sort, I do assure you.
My young friend, said the Badger with great severity, your father, who was a worthy animal, a lot worthier than some others I know, was a particular friend of mine, and told me a great deal he wouldn't have dreamed of telling you. He discovered that passage. He didn't make it, of course. That was done hundreds of years before he ever came to live there, and he repaired it and cleaned it out, because he thought it might come in useful some day in case of trouble or danger. And he showed it to me.
"Don't let my son know about it," he said. "He's a good boy, but very light and volatile in character, and simply cannot hold his tongue. If he's ever in a real fix, and it would be of use to him, you may tell him about the secret passage, but not before."
The other animals looked hard at Toad to see how he would take it. Toad was inclined to be sulky at first, but he brightened up immediately like the good fellow he was.
"Well, well," he said, "perhaps I am a bit of a talker. A popular fellow such as I am, my friends get round me, we chaff, we sparkle, we tell witty stories, and somehow my tongue gets wagging. I have the gift of conversation. I've been told I ought to have a salon, whatever that may be. Never mind. Go on, Badger. How's this passage of yours going to help us?"
"I've found out a thing or two lately," continued the Badger. "I got Otter to disguise himself as a sweep and call at the back door with brushes over his shoulder, asking for a job. There's going to be a big banquet tomorrow night. It's somebody's birthday, the chief weasels, I believe. And all the weasels will be gathered together in the dining hall, eating and drinking and laughing and carrying on, suspecting nothing. No guns, no swords, no sticks, no arms of any sort whatever."
"But the sentinels will be posted as usual," remarked the Rat.
"Exactly," said the Badger. "That is my point. The weasels will trust entirely to their excellent sentinels, and that is where the passage comes in. That very useful tunnel leads right up under the butler's pantry next to the dining hall."
"Aha! That squeaky board in the butler's pantry," said Toad. "Now I understand it." "We shall creep out quietly into the butler's pantry," cried the Mole.
"With our pistols and swords and sticks," shouted the Rat. "And rush in upon them," said the Badger.
"And whack 'em and whack 'em and whack 'em,"
cried the Toad in ecstasy, running round and round the room and jumping over the chairs.
"Very well, then,"
said the Badger, resuming his usual dry manner.
"Our plan is settled, and there's nothing more for you to argue and squabble about. So, as it's getting very late, all of you go right off to bed at once. We will make all the necessary arrangements in the course of the morning tomorrow."
Toad, of course, went off to bed dutifully with the rest. He knew better than to refuse, though he was feeling much too excited to sleep. But he had had a long day, with many events crowded into it, and sheets and blankets were very friendly and comforting things, after plain straw, and not too much of it, spread on the stone floor of a draughty cell. And his head had not been many seconds on his pillow before he was snoring happily. Naturally, he dreamt a good deal about roads that ran away from him just when he wanted them, and canals that chased him and caught him, and a barge that sailed into the banqueting hall with his week's washing just as he was giving a dinner party. And he was alone in the secret passage, pushing onwards, but it twisted and turned round and shook itself and sat up on its end. Yet somehow, at the last, he found himself back in Toad Hall, safe and triumphant, with all his friends gathered round about him, earnestly assuring him that he really was a clever toad. He slept till a late hour next morning. And by the time he got down, he found that the other animals had finished their breakfast some time before. The Mole had slipped off somewhere by himself without telling anyone where he was going. The Badger sat in the armchair, reading the paper and not concerning himself in the slightest about what was going to happen that very evening. The Rat, on the other hand, was running round the room busily, with his arms full of weapons of every kind, distributing them in four little heaps on the floor, and saying excitedly under his breath, as he ran, "Here's a sword for the Rat, here's a sword for the Mole, here's a sword for the Toad, here's a sword for the Badger. Here's a pistol for the Rat, here's a pistol for the Mole, here's a pistol for the Toad, here's a pistol for the Badger." And so on, in a regular, rhythmical way, while the four little heaps gradually grew and grew.
"That's all very well, Rat,"
said the Badger presently, looking at the busy little animal over the edge of his newspaper.
"I'm not blaming you, but just let us once get past the stoats with those detestable guns of theirs, and I assure you we shan't want any swords or pistols. We four, with our sticks, once we're inside the dining hall, why, we shall clear the floor of all the lot of them in 5 minutes. I'd have done the whole thing by myself, only I didn't want to deprive you fellows of the fun.
It's as well to be on the safe side, said the Rat reflectively, polishing a pistol barrel on his sleeve and looking along it. The Toad, having finished his breakfast, picked up a stout stick and swung it vigorously, belaboring imaginary animals.
I'll learn him to steal my house, he cried. I'll learn him, I'll learn him.
Don't say learn him, Toad, said the Rat, greatly shocked. It's not good English. What are you always nagging a Toad for? Inquired the Badger rather peevishly. What's the matter with his English? It's the same what I use myself, and if it's good enough for me, it ought to be good enough for you.
I'm very sorry, said the Rat humbly. Only I think it ought to be teach 'em, not learn 'em.
But we don't want to teach 'em, replied the Badger. We want to learn 'em. Learn 'em, learn 'em. And what's more, we're going to do it, too.
Oh, very well, have it your own way, said the Rat. He was getting rather muddled about it himself, and presently he retired into a corner where he could be heard muttering,
Learn 'em, teach 'em, teach 'em, learn 'em,
till the Badger told him rather sharply to leave off. Presently the Mole came tumbling into the room, evidently very pleased with himself.
I've been having such fun, he began at once. I've been getting a rise out of the stoats.
I hope you've been very careful, Mole, said the Rat anxiously.
I should hope so, too, said the Mole confidently. I got the idea when I went into the kitchen to see about Toad's breakfast being kept hot for him. I found that old washerwoman dress that he came home in yesterday hanging on a towel horse before the fire. So I put it on. And the bonnet as well, and the shawl, and off I went to Toad Hall as bold as you please. The sentries were on the lookout, of course, with their guns and their who comes there and all the rest of their nonsense. Good morning, gentlemen, says I, very respectful. Want any washing done today?
They looked at me very proud and stiff and haughty and said, Go away, washerwoman. We don't do any washing on duty.
Or at any other time, says I. Oh, wasn't I funny, Toad?
Poor, frivolous animal, said Toad very loftily. The fact is, he felt exceedingly jealous of Mole for what he had just done. It was exactly what he would have liked to have done himself, if only he had thought of it first, and hadn't gone and overslept himself.
Some of the stoats turned quite pink, continued the Mole, and the sergeant in charge, he said to me very short, he said, Now run away, my good woman, run away. Don't keep my men idling and talking on their posts. Run away, says I. It won't be me that'll be running away in a very short time from now.
Oh, Moly, how could you? Said the Rat, dismayed.
The Badger laid down his paper.
I could see them pricking up their ears and looking at each other, went on the Mole. And the sergeant said to them, Never mind her, she doesn't know what she's talking about. Oh, don't I, said I. Well, let me tell you this. My daughter, she washes for Mr. Badger, and that'll show you whether I know what I'm talking about, and you'll know pretty soon, too. 100 bloodthirsty badgers armed with rifles are going to attack Toad Hall this very night by way of the paddock. 6 boatloads of rats, with pistols and cutlasses, will come up the river and effect a landing in the garden, while a picked body of toads, known as the diehards or the Death or glory, Toads, will storm the orchard and carry everything before them, yelling for vengeance. There won't be much left of you to wash by the time they've done with you, unless you clear out while you have the chance. Then I ran away, and when I was out of sight, I hid. And presently I came creeping back along the ditch and took a peep at them through the hedge. They were all as nervous and flustered as could be, running all ways at once and falling over each other and everyone giving orders to everybody else and not listening. And the sergeant kept sending off parties of stoats to distant parts of the grounds and then sending other fellows to fetch 'em back again. And I heard them saying to each other, "That's just like the weasels. They're to stop comfortably in the banqueting hall and are feasting and toasts and songs and all sorts of fun, while we must stay on guard in the cold and the dark and in the end be cut to pieces by bloodthirsty badgers." "Oh, you silly ass, Mole," cried Toad. "You've been and spoilt everything."
"Mole," said the badger in his dry, quiet way, "I perceive you have more sense in your little finger than some other animals have in the whole of their fat bodies. You have managed excellently, and I begin to have great hopes of you. Good Mole! Clever Mole!"
The toad was simply wild with jealousy, more especially as he couldn't make out for the life of him what the mole had done that was so particularly clever. But fortunately for him, before he could show temper or expose himself to the badger's sarcasm, the bell rang for luncheon. It was a simple but sustaining meal, bacon and broad beans and a macaroni pudding. And when they had quite done, the badger settled himself into an armchair and said,
"Well, we've got our work cut out for us tonight, and it will probably be pretty late before we're quite through with it. So I'm just going to take 40 winks while I can."
And he drew a handkerchief over his face and was soon snoring. The anxious and laborious rat at once resumed his preparations and started running between his four little heaps, muttering, "Here's a belt for the rat, here's a belt for the mole, here's a belt for the toad, here's a belt for the badger," and so on, with every fresh accoutrement he produced, to which there seemed really no end. So the mole drew his arm through Toad's, led him out into the open air, shoved him into a wicker chair, and made him tell him all his adventures from beginning to end, which Toad was only too willing to do. The mole was a good listener, and Toad, with no one to check his statements or to criticize in an unfriendly spirit, rather let himself go. Indeed, much that he related belonged more properly to the category of what might have happened had I only thought of it in time instead of 10 minutes afterwards. Those are always the best and the raciest adventures, and why should they not be truly ours, as much as the somewhat inadequate things that really come off?
Chapter 12. The Last Chapter. The Return of Ulysses. When it began to grow dark, the rat, with an air of excitement and mystery, summoned them back into the parlor, stood each of them up alongside of his little heap, and proceeded to dress them up for the coming expedition. He was very earnest and thoroughgoing about it, and the affair took quite a long time. First there was a belt to go round each animal, and then a sword to be stuck into each belt, and then a cutlass on the other side to balance it. Then a pair of pistols, a policeman's truncheon, several sets of handcuffs, some bandages and sticking plaster, and a flask and a sandwich case. The badger laughed good-humoredly and said,
"All right, Ratty, it amuses you and it doesn't hurt me. I'm going to do all I've got to do with this here stick."
But the rat only said, "Please, Badger, you know I shouldn't like you to blame me afterwards and say I'd forgotten anything." When all was quite ready, the badger took a dark lantern in one paw, grasped his great stick with the other, and said,
"Now then, follow me. Mole first, 'cause I'm very pleased with him. Rat next, Toad last. And look here, Toady, don't you chatter so much as usual, or you'll be sent back as sure as fate."
The toad was so anxious not to be left out that he took up the inferior position assigned to him without a murmur, and the animals set off. The badger led them along by the river for a little way, and then suddenly swung himself over the edge into a hole in the river bank, a little above the water. The mole and the rat followed silently, swinging themselves successfully into the hole as they had seen the badger do. But when it came to Toad's turn, of course, he managed to slip and fall into the water with a loud splash and a squeal of alarm. He was hauled out by his friends, rubbed down and wrung out hastily, comforted, and set on his legs. But the badger was seriously angry and told him that the very next time he made a fool of himself, he would most certainly be left behind. So at last they were in the secret passage, and the cutting-out expedition had really begun. It was cold and dark and damp and low and narrow, and poor Toad began to shiver, partly from dread of what might be before him, partly because he was wet through. The lantern was far ahead, and he could not help lagging behind a little in the darkness. Then he heard the rat call out warningly, "Come on, Toad!" And a terror seized him of being left behind, alone, in the darkness. And he came on with such a rush that he upset the rat into the mole, and the mole into the badger, and for a moment all was confusion. The badger thought they were being attacked from behind, and as there was no room to use a stick or a cutlass, drew a pistol, and was on the point of putting a bullet into Toad. When he found out what had really happened, he was very angry indeed, and said, "Now, this time that tiresome Toad shall be left behind." But Toad whimpered, and the other two promised that they would be answerable for his good conduct, and at last the badger was pacified, and the procession moved on. Only this time the rat brought up the rear with a firm grip on the shoulder of Toad. So they groped and shuffled along, with their ears pricked up and their paws on their pistols, till at last the badger said, "We ought by now to be pretty nearly under the hall." Then suddenly they heard, far away as it might be, and yet apparently nearly over their heads, a confused murmur of sound, as if people were shouting and cheering and stamping on the floor and hammering on tables. The Toad's nervous terrors all returned. But the badger only remarked placidly,
"They are going it, the weasels."
The passage now began to slope upwards. They groped onward a little further, and then the noise broke out again, quite distinct this time, and very close above them.
"Hooray, hooray, hooray, hooray!"
they heard, and the stamping of little feet on the floor, and the clinking of glasses as little fists pounded on the table.
"What a time they're having," said the badger. "Come on."
They hurried along the passage till it came to a full stop, and they found themselves standing under the trap door that led up into the butler's pantry. Such a tremendous noise was going on in the banqueting hall that there was little danger of their being overheard. The badger said,
"Now, boys, all together,"
and the four of them put their shoulders to the trapdoor and heaved it back. Hoisting each other up, they found themselves standing in the pantry with only a door between them and the banqueting hall where their unconscious enemies were carousing. The noise, as they emerged from the passage, was simply deafening. At last, as the cheering and hammering slowly subsided, a voice could be made out saying,
"Well, I do not propose to detain you much longer,"
great applause,
"but before I resume my seat," renewed cheering, "I should like to say one word about our kind host, Mr. Toad. We all know Toad."
Great laughter.
"Good Toad, modest Toad, honest Toad,"
shrieks of merriment.
"Only just let me get at him,"
muttered Toad, grinding his teeth.
"Hold hard a minute,"
said the badger, restraining him with difficulty.
"Get ready, all of you."
"Let me sing you a little song," went on the voice, "which I have composed on the subject of Toad."
Prolonged applause. Then the chief weasel, for it was he, began in a high, squeaky voice,
"Toad, he went a-pleasuring gaily down the street."
The badger drew himself up, took a firm grip of his stick with both paws, glanced round at his comrades, and cried,
"The hour is come. Follow me!"
and flung the door wide open. My, what a squealing and a squeaking and a screeching filled the air! Well might the terrified weasels dive under the tables and spring madly up at the windows. Well might the ferrets rush wildly for the fireplace and get hopelessly jammed in the chimney. Well might tables and chairs be upset and glass and china be sent crashing on the floor in the panic of that terrible moment
when the four heroes strode wrathfully into the room. The mighty badger, his whiskers bristling, his great cudgel whistling through the air. Mole, black and grim, brandishing his stick and shouting his awful war cry, "A mole! A mole!" Rat, desperate and determined, his belt bulging with weapons of every age and every variety. Toad, frenzied with excitement and injured pride, swollen to twice his ordinary size, leaping into the air and emitting toad whoops that chilled them to the marrow. "Toad, he went a-pleasuring!" he yelled. "I'll pleasure him!" And he went straight for the chief weasel. They were but four in all, but to the panic-stricken weasels, the hall seemed full of monstrous animals, gray, black, brown, and yellow, whooping and flourishing enormous cudgels, and they broke and fled with squeals of terror and dismay, this way and that, through the windows, up the chimney, anywhere to get out of reach of those terrible sticks. The affair was soon over. Up and down the whole length of the hall strode the four friends, whacking with their sticks at every head that showed itself. And in 5 minutes, the room was cleared. Through the broken windows, the shrieks of terrified weasels escaping across the lawn were borne faintly to their ears. On the floor lay prostrate some dozen or so of the enemy, on whom the mole was busily engaged in fitting handcuffs. The badger, resting from his labors, leant on his stick and wiped his honest brow.
"Mole," he said, "you're the best of fellows. Just cut along outside and look after those stout sentries of yours and see what they're doing. I've an idea that, thanks to you, we shan't have much trouble from them tonight."
The mole vanished promptly through a window, and the badger bade the other two set a table on its legs again, pick up knives and forks and plates and glasses from the debris on the floor, and see if they could find materials for a supper.
"I want some grub, I do,"
he said, in that rather common way he had of speaking.
"Stir your stumps, Toad, and look lively. We've got your house back for you, and you don't offer us so much as a sandwich."
Toad felt rather hurt that the badger didn't say pleasant things to him, as he had to the mole, and tell him what a fine fellow he was, and how splendidly he had fought, for he was rather particularly pleased with himself and the way he had gone for the chief weasel and sent him flying across the table with one blow of his stick. But he bustled about, and so did the rat, and soon they found some guava jelly in a glass dish, and a cold chicken, a tongue that had hardly been touched, some trifle, and quite a lot of lobster salad. And in the pantry they came upon a basketful of French rolls and any quantity of cheese, butter, and celery. They were just about to sit down when the mole clambered in through the window, chuckling, with an armful of rifles.
"It's all over," he reported. "From what I can make out, as soon as the stoats, who were very nervous and jumpy already, heard the shrieks and the yells and the uproar inside the hall, some of them threw down their rifles and fled. The others stood fast for a bit, but when the weasels came rushing out upon them, they thought they were betrayed, and the stoats grappled with the weasels, and the weasels fought to get away, and they wrestled and wriggled and punched each other and rolled over and over till most of them rolled into the river. They've all disappeared by now, one way or another, and I've got their rifles, so that's all right."
"Excellent, undeserving animal,"
said the badger, his mouth full of chicken and trifle.
"Now, there's just one more thing I want you to do, Mole, before you sit down to your supper along of us. And I wouldn't trouble you, only I know I can trust you to see a thing done, and I wish I could say the same of everyone I know. I'd send Rat if he wasn't a poet. I want you to take those fellows on the floor there upstairs with you, and have some bedrooms cleaned out and tidied up and made really comfortable. See that they sweep under the beds and put clean sheets and pillowcases on and turn down one corner of the bedclothes, just as you know it ought to be done. And have a can of hot water and clean towels and fresh cakes of soap put in each room. And then you can give them a licking apiece, if it's any satisfaction to you, and put them out by the back door. And we shan't see any more of them, I fancy. And then come along and have some of this cold tongue. It's first rate. I'm very pleased with you, Mole.
The good-natured Mole picked up a stick, formed his prisoners up in a line on the floor, gave them the order, "Quick march!" and led his squad off to the upper floor. After a time, he appeared again, smiling, and said that every room was ready and as clean as a new pin. "And I didn't have to lick them, either," he added. "I thought, on the whole, they had had licking enough for one night, and the weasels, when I put the point to them, quite agreed with me and said they wouldn't think of troubling me. They were very penitent, and said they were extremely sorry for what they had done, but it was all the fault of the chief weasel and the stoats, and if ever they could do anything for us at any time to make up, we had only got to mention it. So I gave them a roll apiece and let them out at the back, and off they ran as hard as they could." Then the mole pulled his chair up to the table and pitched into the cold tongue, and Toad, like the gentleman he was, put all his jealousy from him and said heartily, "Thank you kindly, dear mole, for all your pains and trouble tonight, and especially for your cleverness this morning." The badger was pleased at that and said,
"There spoke my brave Toad."
So they finished their supper in great joy and contentment, and presently retired to rest between clean sheets, safe in Toad's ancestral home, won back by matchless valor, consummate strategy, and a proper handling of sticks. The following morning, Toad, who had overslept himself as usual, came down to breakfast disgracefully late, and found on the table a certain quantity of eggshells, some fragments of cold and leathery toast, a coffee pot 3/4 empty, and really very little else, which did not tend to improve his temper, considering that, after all, it was his own house. Through the French windows of the breakfast room, he could see the mole and the water rat sitting in wicker chairs out on the lawn, evidently telling each other stories, roaring with laughter and kicking their short legs up in the air. The badger, who was in an armchair and deep in the morning paper, merely looked up and nodded when Toad entered the room. But Toad knew his man, so he sat down and made the best breakfast he could, merely observing to himself that he would get square with the others sooner or later. When he had nearly finished, the badger looked up and remarked rather shortly,
"I'm sorry, Toad, but I'm afraid there's a heavy morning's work in front of you. You see, we really ought to have a banquet at once to celebrate this affair. It's expected of you. In fact, it's the rule."
"Oh, all right," said the Toad readily. "Anything to oblige. Though why on earth you should want to have a banquet in the morning, I cannot understand. But you know I do not live to please myself, but merely to find out what my friends want, and then try and arrange it for them, you dear old badger."
"Don't pretend to be stupider than you really are," replied the badger crossly. "And don't chuckle and splutter in your coffee while you're talking. It's not manners. What I mean is, the banquet will be at night, of course, but the invitations will have to be written and got off at once, and you've got to write them. Now, sit down at that table. There's stacks of letter paper on it with Toad Hall at the top in blue and gold, and write invitations to all our friends, and if you stick to it, we shall get them out before luncheon, and I'll bear a hand too and take my share of the burden. I'll order the banquet."
"What?" cried Toad, dismayed. "Me stop indoors and write a lot of rotten letters on a jolly morning like this, when I want to go around my property and set everything and everybody to rights, and swagger about and enjoy myself? Certainly not. I'll see you. Stop a minute, though. Why, of course, dear badger. What is my pleasure or convenience compared with that of others? You wish it done, and it shall be done. Go, badger, order the banquet, order what you like, then join our young friends outside in their innocent mirth, oblivious of me and my cares and toils. I sacrifice this fair morning on the altar of duty and friendship."
The badger looked at him very suspiciously, but Toad's frank, open countenance made it difficult to suggest any unworthy motive in this change of attitude. He quitted the room, accordingly, in the direction of the kitchen, and soon as the door had closed behind him, Toad hurried to the writing-table. A fine idea had occurred to him while he was talking. He would write the invitations, and he would take care to mention the leading part he had taken in the fight and how he had laid the chief weasel flat. And he would hint at his adventures and what a career of triumph he had to tell about. And on the flyleaf, he would give a sort of program of entertainment for the evening, something like this as he sketched it out in his head.
Speech by Toad. There will be other speeches by Toad during the evening. Address by Toad. Synopsis. Our prison system. The waterways of old England. Horse dealing and how to deal. Property. Its rights and its duties. Back to the land. A typical English squire. Song by Toad. Composed by himself. Other compositions by Toad will be sung in the course of the evening by the composer. The idea pleased him mightily, and he worked very hard and got all the letters finished by noon, at which hour it was reported to him that there was a small and rather bedraggled weasel at the door, inquiring timidly whether he could be of any service to the gentleman. Toad swaggered out and found it was one of the prisoners of the previous evening, very respectful and anxious to please. He patted him on the head, shoved the bundle of invitations into his paw, and told him to cut along quick and deliver them as fast as he could, and, if he liked, to come back again in the evening. Perhaps there might be a shilling for him, or, again, perhaps there mightn't. And the poor weasel seemed really quite grateful, and hurried off eagerly to do his mission. When the other animals came back to luncheon, very boisterous and breezy after a morning on the river, the mole, whose conscience had been pricking him, looked doubtfully at Toad, expecting to find him sulky or depressed. Instead, he was so uppish and inflated that the mole began to suspect something, while the rat and the badger exchanged significant glances. As soon as the meal was over, Toad thrust his paws deep into his trouser pockets, remarking casually, "Well, look after yourselves, you fellows. Ask for anything you want," and was swaggering off in the direction of the garden, where he wanted to think out an idea or two for his coming speeches, when the rat caught him by the arm. Toad rather suspected what he was after and did his best to get away. But when the badger took him firmly by the other arm, he began to see that the game was up. The two animals conducted him between them into the small smoking room that opened out of the entrance hall, shut the door, and put him into a chair. Then they both stood in front of him, while Toad sat silent and regarded them with much suspicion and ill humor.
"Now look here, Toad," said the rat. "It's about this banquet, and very sorry I am to have to speak to you like this. But we want you to understand clearly, once and for all, that there are going to be no speeches and no songs. Try and grasp the fact that on this occasion we're not arguing with you. We're just telling you."
Toad saw that he was trapped.
They understood him. They saw through him. They had got ahead of him. His pleasant dream was shattered.
"Mayn't I sing them just one little song?" he pleaded piteously.
"No, not one little song," replied the rat firmly, though his heart bled as he noticed the trembling lip of the poor, disappointed Toad. "It's no good, Toady. You know well that your songs are all conceit and boasting and vanity, and your speeches are all self-praise and gross exaggeration and
gas,"
put in the badger in his common way. "It's for your own good, Toady," went on the rat.
"You know you must turn over a new leaf sooner or later, and now seems a splendid time to begin, a sort of turning point in your career. Please don't think that saying all this doesn't hurt me more than it hurts you."
Toad remained a long while plunged in thought. At last he raised his head, and the traces of strong emotion were visible on his features.
"You have conquered, my friends," he said in broken accents. "It was, to be sure, but a
small thing that I asked. Merely leave to blossom and expand for yet one more evening, to let myself go and hear the tumultuous applause that always seems to me somehow to bring out my best qualities. However, you are right, I know, and I am wrong. Henceforth, I will be a very different toad. My friends, you shall never have occasion to blush for me again. But, oh dear, this is a hard world.
And pressing his handkerchief to his face, he left the room with faltering footsteps.
Badger, said the rat, I feel like a brute. I wonder what you feel like.
Oh, I know, said the badger gloomily. But the thing had to be done. This good fellow has got to live here and hold his own and be respected. Would you have him a common laughing-stock, mocked and jeered at by stoats and weasels?
Of course not, said the rat. And talking of weasels, it's lucky we came upon that little weasel just as he was setting out with Toad's invitations. I suspected something from what you told me, and had a look at one or two. They were simply disgraceful. I confiscated the lot, and the good mole is now sitting in the blue boudoir, filling up plain, simple invitation cards.
At last the hour for the banquet began to draw near, and Toad, who on leaving the others had retired to his bedroom, was still sitting there, melancholy and thoughtful. His brow resting on his paw, he pondered long and deeply. Gradually his countenance cleared, and he began to smile, long, slow smiles. Then he took to giggling in a shy, self-conscious manner. At last he got up, locked the door, drew the curtains across the windows, collected all the chairs in the room and arranged them in a semicircle, and took up his position in front of them, swelling visibly. Then he bowed, coughed twice, and, letting himself go, with uplifted voice he sang to the enraptured audience that his imagination so clearly saw.
Toad's last little song. The toad came home. There was panic in the parlor and howling in the hall. There was crying in the cowshed and shrieking in the stall when the toad came home. When the toad came home, there was smashing in of window and crashing in of door. There was chivying of weasels that fainted on the floor when the toad came home. Bang! Go the drums! The trumpeters are tooting, and the soldiers are saluting, and the cannon they are shooting, and the motor cars are hooting as the hero comes. Shout, hooray! And let each one of the crowd try and shout it very loud in honor of an animal of whom you're justly proud, for it's Toad's great day!
He sang this very loud with great unction and expression, and when he had done, he sang it all over again. Then he heaved a deep sigh, a long, long, long sigh. Then he dipped his hairbrush in the water jug, parted his hair in the middle, and plastered it down very straight and sleek on each side of his face. And unlocking the door, went quietly down the stairs to greet his guests, who he knew must be assembling in the drawing-room. All the animals cheered when he entered, and crowded round to congratulate him and say nice things about his courage and his cleverness and his fighting qualities. But Toad only smiled faintly and murmured, "Not at all," or sometimes for a change, "On the contrary." Otter, who was standing on the hearth-rug, describing to an admiring circle of friends exactly how he would have managed things had he been there, came forward with a shout, threw his arm round Toad's neck, and tried to take him round the room in triumphal progress. But Toad, in a mild way, was rather snubby to him, remarking gently as he disengaged himself, "Badger's was the mastermind. The mole and the water rat bore the brunt of the fighting. I merely served in the ranks and did little or nothing.
The animals were evidently puzzled and taken aback by this unexpected attitude of his. And Toad felt, as he moved from one guest to the other, making his modest responses, that he was an object of absorbing interest to everyone. The Badger had ordered everything of the best, and the banquet was a great success. There was much talking and laughter and chaff among the animals, but through it all, Toad, who of course was in the chair, looked down his nose and murmured pleasant nothings to the animals on either side of him. At intervals, he stole a glance at the Badger and the Rat, and always when he looked, they were staring at each other with their mouths open, and this gave him the greatest satisfaction. Some of the younger and livelier animals, as the evening wore on, got whispering to each other that things were not so amusing as they used to be in the good old days. And there were some knockings on the table and cries of, "Toad! Speech! Speech from Toad! Song! Mr. Toad's song!" But Toad only shook his head gently, raised one paw in mild protest, and by pressing delicacies on his guests, by topical small talk, and by earnest inquiries after members of their families not yet old enough to appear at social functions, managed to convey to them that this dinner was being run on strictly conventional lines. He was indeed an altered toad. After this climax, the four animals continued to lead their lives, so rudely broken in upon by civil war, in great joy and contentment, undisturbed by further risings or invasions. Toad, after due consultation with his friends, selected a handsome gold chain and locket set with pearls, which he dispatched to the jailer's daughter with a letter that even the Badger admitted to be modest, grateful, and appreciative. And the engine driver, in his turn, was properly thanked and compensated for all his pains and trouble. Under severe compulsion from the Badger, even the barge woman was, with some trouble, sought out, and the value of her horse discreetly made good to her, though Toad kicked terribly at this, holding himself to be an instrument of fate, sent to punish fat women with mottled arms who couldn't tell a real gentleman when they saw one. The amount involved, it was true, was not very burdensome, the gypsy's valuation being admitted by local assessors to be approximately correct. Sometimes, in the course of long summer evenings, the friends would take a stroll together in the wild wood, now successfully tamed so far as they were concerned, and it was pleasing to see how respectfully they were greeted by the inhabitants, and how the mother weasels would bring their young ones to the mouths of their holes and say, pointing, "Look, baby, there goes the great Mr. Toad, and that's the gallant Water Rat, a terrible fighter, walking along of him. And yonder comes the famous Mr. Mole, of whom you so often have heard your father tell." But when their infants were fractious and quite beyond control, they would quiet them by telling how, if they didn't hush them and not fret them, the terrible gray Badger would up and get them. This was a base libel on Badger, who, though he cared little about society, was rather fond of children. But it never failed to have its full effect. This concludes the reading of The Wind in the Willows by Kenneth Graham. This book was read by Jim Weiss. Books on Tape produces many new audiobook titles each month. To find out more about them, call our customer service department at the number which appears on this package, or visit us at our website, www.booksontape.com.